This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Plenty to talk about as we look back at the Championship action from the weekend as we head into the second international break. We'll be looking back at all the Championship action. In particular, we'll be looking at Bristol City's 1-0 win at home against Reading. Swansea, big shock of the weekend, losing 2-1 at home against Stoke. It seems like Nathan Jones is on the verge, but he did pick up a 2-1 win. We're also talking about Cardiff's 4-2 loss at West Brom. Reading, as I said, they lost 1-0 away at Bristol City, so we'll get that perspective as well. We'll also talk about Fulham's 2-2 draw at home against Charlton. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Lovesport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. This is the Championship Fan Show here on Love Sport. So plenty to talk about on this Monday afternoon from the Championship. As I mentioned, we go into the second international break. And currently top of the table are West Brom. They're on 22 points after 11 games. Nottingham Forest are joint top with them, just one goal behind on goal difference. Down at the bottom, Stoke still at the bottom on 5 points, despite that win on the weekend. Their first win away at Swansea. What an impressive result that was for Nathan Jones' side. Does that make sure he keeps his job going forward over the next few weeks? Barnsley and Reading fans, things are looking tough for you, but Huddersfield are finally out of the bottom three. Danny Cowley's side, a comfortable 3-0 victory. Looking through the results going through this weekend on Friday night at St Andrews, Birmingham won by 2-1 against Jonathan Woodgate's Middlesbrough. Then into the Saturday games, the early kickoff was at Craven Cottage, where Fulham had to come from behind twice to draw 2-2 at home against Charlton. Bristol City won 1-0 at home against Reading. Derby won 2-0 against Luton as they looked to put the off-field issues behind them. Huddersfield 3, Hull 0. Danny Cowley's side getting another win. They've pushed themselves out of the relegation zone now. Millwall 2, Leeds 1. Such an impressive result for the home side. Neil Harris resigned on Thursday, but they did beat high-flying Leeds. Nottingham Forest 1, Brentford 0, which puts Forest joint top with West Brom. Preston 5, Barnsley 1. Preston up into third. Barnsley struggles continue. QPR 4, Blackburn 2 in a high-scoring affair. Sheffield Wednesday 1, Wigan 0. Swansea 1, Stoke 2. And West Brom 4, Cardiff 2. We're going to look back at Bristol City's win on the weekend that lifts them up into 6th in the table on 20 points. They won 1-0 at home against Reading. I'm delighted to say that Stanley Hughes from One Stream and Bristol Podcast joins us this afternoon. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Stanley. A 1-0 win against Reading, who are right down the bottom. Did you expect a more emphatic win than that?
Yeah, I think I did. I don't think I was alone. I think most Bristol City fans, after the game, we're certainly thinking a win's a win, but during the game, we're left a little bit uncomfortable by some of the things we saw, maybe some of the things we didn't see.
One of the things that Lee Johnson said after the game was that Bristol City perhaps did become a little bit nervous in that second half. Why is that? Because Bristol City have made a good start to the season. Conversely, Reading have made a very poor start. So why was it that, obviously, when you just have a one-goal advantage, that's obviously a recipe for disaster because all it takes is one chance for the opposition to get back in it. But why, in this situation at home, did Bristol City become a bit nervy in that second half?
I don't know. Weirdly, I combed through his press conference and I didn't actually pick up on the nervous. I don't know. I think second half, Reading actually grew into the game. I was chatting to a Reading fan outside the stadium after the game and a few of them said that it's quite been a recurring theme of their season. The first half, the tactics would be slightly off. They won't be playing at the best they can. And the second half, they go into it. I think Reading started to see more of the ball. You know, we're a team that's actually been all right for possessions against some of the lesser teams this season. We only had 53%, so it's still quite an even game. I think because we were playing a different formation, we've been recently been playing 3-5-2. But on Saturday, we played a 4-4-2, and I think our midfield was a little bit overrun. We saw Andy Vyman going to left mid, so we ended up playing 4-5-1 just to get some of the ball back. Our subs weren't particularly good. We brought on young Starlet Antoine Semenyo, who has been absolutely crucified in the Bristol City social media world for his lack of effort. In terms of nervousness, I think the crowd are probably more nervous than the players. You know, we had to block quite a few shots. Reading had more shots than us, more corners than us overall. But I don't know. I didn't get a sense that we were too nervous. I think that's Lee Johnson just putting out some excuses to calm everyone down.
So it's now 10 unbeaten for Bristol City, and another thing that Lee Johnson said was that the young side were proving their credentials. Is that a fair reflection of not just this game, but the start, that there are some young players really starting to emerge in this Bristol City side?
Yeah, I think so. I think probably the person that springs to mind quickest would be Han Noir Masengo, the young centre midfielder we bought from Monaco for 2 to 3 million euros, depending on who you believe. He's been pretty exceptional. The main reason why I think a lot of these young players have had to sort of come to the forefront and play so well over the last few months is because we've had a terrible amount of injuries. You look at the players we signed in the week running up to the end of the transfer window. It was Adam Nash, a star centre mid from Serie A for a few million. He got injured after two games. Benneke Fobe, our sort of prime striker and top scorer, he's out for the rest of the season. We signed Jada Silva on a permanent, our star fullback. He's been injured. So I think the reason why a lot of these youngsters had to play is not because Lee Johnson's willing to give them time and trust them. He's sort of had his hand played for him, if you will. And because of the injuries, a lot of these youngsters are starting to play and having to prove themselves. Otherwise, we've got no one else to come in.
As you said, Benneke Fobe is out for a little while with injury. Does that mean that the likes of Andreas Weimann and Famara Djiedju are going to have to really step up over the next few months and really contribute goals? Weimann has 4, Djiedju has 3 goals so far. Fobe also had 3. So are those going to be where the onus is going to be in an attacking sense?
Yeah, certainly. Although I think this season it's become more evident that we're a team that can share the goals around. Tommy Rowe, a left-back who signs as a free transfer, wasn't even meant to play, really, because Jada Silva was going to be our wing-back, has already scored a couple of goals. Casey Palmer's got his first goal for the club this season. I think we're a team that could share the goals around. You saw away to Preston, it was 3-3, and the players that scored the goal were Nathan Baker, Taylor Moore, and the third one, who is so unimportant, I can't remember his name. So that shows who's scoring goals for us at the moment. But no, I think in terms of Weimann and Djiedju, I think you want to see them score more goals. They've sort of been a partnership fleetingly over the last few seasons, but never really been given a chance in the team as a pair. So hopefully they can do well and link up. And the third strike at the moment, unless we get a free agent, is young Antoine Semenya, who's yet to get a goal. Was met with a lot of excitement when he came back from loan last season. We rejected £2 million from Chelsea for him, but he's yet to get his goal. And at the moment, most Bristol City fans are quite unimpressed. So it would be interesting to see in the coming weeks if we sign a striker as a free agent between now and January. And if we don't, who are we going to go for in January? How much money have we got in the transfer kitty?
When we head into an international break, Stanley, a lot of the questions asked are whether it's a good time or a bad time for clubs. And it differs from club to club and also differs from international break to international break. But heading into this one, obviously off the back of a win, but there were 3 draws for Bristol City before this against Brentford, Preston and Swansea. So even though Bristol City are on a 10-run unbeaten game run at the moment, does it perhaps come at a good time because there have been quite a lot of drop points in the last 4 games?
Yeah, I think despite, you know, the club will always tweet out after the game something sort of quite simple, quite abrupt. Sometimes it's sort of, you know, another win, what a great week, something like that. And after the 3 draws, they went with 9 unbeaten, if I remember correctly. So then the sense of Bristol, it was, yeah, sort of half mixed between, yeah, fair enough, we have, you know, we haven't lost in 9 games. But if we don't beat Reading, suddenly that's 4 games without a win. That's how quickly sort of the momentum can change in the Championship. In terms of, is it a good time for an international break? I'm not sure it goes really either way. I think momentum can carry on. It can disappear. I don't really take much into that. The real problem in recent international breaks is we've had a lot of injuries. Adam Nash wasn't fully fit and declared himself fit to go to the Hungary's games and then sort of re-aggravated his injury, and we haven't seen him play for a couple of months. Thomas Kalas, our record ever signing, we signed in the summer from $8 million from Chelsea. He's apparently going to be called up by the Czech Republic, but he hasn't played for us for 4 to 5 weeks. So the main worry for Bristol City fans is are not fully fit players going to have their injuries aggravated by their international sides?
And just finally then, Stanley, Bristol City currently 6th on 20 points. It is all very, very close because Bristol City are just a couple of points off the top 2, who are both on 22 in the form of West Brom and Nottingham Forest. So has the start gone kind of according to plan for what you expected, and have Bristol City exceeded any expectations that maybe fans would have had pre-season?
I think we're probably about where most City fans would have hoped and predicted. I think just maybe there were a few out there who were sort of pessimists after losing Adam Webster and not signing a striker until Bankophobia appeared last minute, that maybe thought we'd be a mid-table team this season. But I personally thought we'd be a top six team. And to be a top six team and to be 10 unbeaten with, you know, our star left back, our star striker now injured, our star, arguably our best centre mid, our record ever signing centre back, all injured, and to be using sort of 18-year-old Masengo and Tommy Rowe, who's not even a, you know, a real left back, to be sixth and 10 unbeaten with the amount of injuries we have and with the players ready to come back, I think there's a lot of fans that feel similar to me and think it's actually we could end up being better than sixth when our squad is fully up and running.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Stanley. That was Stanley Hughes from One Stream in Bristol podcast, giving his views on Bristol City's win at the weekend. It now does mean they are 10 unbeaten now for Bristol City. They lost on the opening weekend, but ever since they've been unbeaten. And even though there have been quite a lot of draws recently, three of the last four have been draws. One of the key things about the Championship is continuing an unbeaten run, just making sure you don't lose. And that's what Bristol City are doing at the moment. Sixth place on 20 points, just a couple of points off the top of the table. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. Up next, we'll be talking about one of the big shocks of the weekend, Swansea losing 2-1 at home against Stoke. And we'll also be talking about Cardiff's 4-2 loss at West Brom.
Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. So we want to hear from you this afternoon about how your Championship club is faring going into the second international break. For one side, it was a very disappointing and a shocking defeat at the weekend. Swansea lost 2-1 at home against Nathan Jones' Stoke, who are sat bottom of the table. To look back at that, and also Cardiff's defeat as well, two defeats for the Welsh Cubs this weekend. We can speak to Tom Coleman, sports writer at The Wales Online. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Tom. When Andre Ayew gave Swansea, who are right near the top, the lead inside the opening minutes, could you have foreseen what happened, and could anyone have imagined what was going to unfold in the 90th minute when Stoke scored the winner?
No is the short answer. I mean, as you say, it was an afternoon that got off to a sort of perfect start. But I think, you know, given the way that Stoke have been this season, Nathan Jones coming into this game under an immense amount of pressure, I think everyone was fully expecting Swansea to finish the job, and it would be a thoroughly comfortable afternoon for them. But I think, as has been the case in a few games this season, actually, I mean, they've not been able to match up a good start with a good finish. There's been a couple of times this season where they've sort of lost the intensity that they started off with. And I mean, I watched the win at Charlton the other night, fantastic result. But I mean, even there, they sort of dropped off that level of intensity and was kind of really holding on at the end. So it is unfortunately a theme that's running through Swansea City at the moment. But I don't think anyone's really concerned about how the season is going. I think yes, it was a poor performance, probably the poorest under Steve Cooper so far. But Swansea still fourth in the league. They're heading to the international break with a lot of positives, and I think on the whole it's still been a great start for them.
Well, as you said, it has been a very good start. Fourth place, 21 points, just 1 point off top place. So if you take everything in a general perspective, it's been very good. But what will that type of a defeat kind of do psychologically for Steve Cooper and his side? And in some ways, how do you view it? Is it a good thing that the international break comes because they've got 2 weeks to kind of forget about it, move on, and it kind of is then a distant memory? Or will it linger on their minds for the next 2 weeks and kind of you'll be rueing what happened over those 90 minutes?
It's difficult to say, really. I mean, I'm not too sure how much of an impact the international break really has. I think probably in an ideal world, you know, they'd want to get back out there and set the record straight. But you know, Steve Cooper's not, I mean, I can't speak for the team, obviously, but I mean, having spoken to Steve Cooper a few times this season and you know, spoken about the form at home, which oddly hasn't matched up to the form away, you know, he's the sort of guy who doesn't kind of dwell on many of these things. I think he'll certainly take things out of the game. I don't think he'll be too worried. I mean, he was very keen to stress after the game, but he saw that performance as a one-off. Credit to him, he didn't hide away. You know, he fully admitted that performance levels weren't good enough. They allowed themselves to lose control of midfield a little bit too easily, and I think Cooper recognised that, and that's all credit to him. But there's going to be plenty to ponder. But I mean, in terms of whether the international break will have an impact, I think it's difficult to say on that one, really.
One of the interesting things that Steve Cooper said after the game was that Stoke's squad on paper is one of the strongest, if not the strongest, in the league. So I never looked at the league table. Are those rather intriguing comments to you? Because it strikes me as kind of not getting all your excuses in, but perhaps saying something like that to try and lessen the blow. Or do you think that Steve Cooper does genuinely have a point, and that even though they are solo down the table, bottom of the table still, on paper, the individuals within that squad are a squad that's capable of being right up there in the Championship?
Well, I mean, I think there's two things to take from that. I think, first of all, the whole reason that Stoke City are one of the stories of the season at the moment is precisely because they've got such a strong squad, and they do have a strong squad. But there's clearly issues in that dressing room. I personally think the issues probably run a little bit deeper than Nathan Jones. But I think, when you look at that squad, when people looked at it at the beginning of the season, I mean, okay, they probably had a disappointing campaign last time out, but I think many people expected them to sort of be in the mix, really. I don't think anyone could have ever foreseen such a horrific start. But in terms of not looking at the table, that's Steve Cooper all over, really. I mean, he doesn't really like to pay too much attention to that. And I think, that's partially perhaps to sort of keep expectations in check, because I think, as we all know, when teams get off to a good start or a good run of form and sort of start climbing the table, expectations go up a little bit, don't they? So, I mean, I think he's perhaps trying to keep that in check. But I think he's also aware of the realities of the Championship. And, this is a league where, anyone can beat anyone, really, and you cannot take anything for granted. And I think that's perhaps what he's alluding to there.
Moving on to the other side in Wales in the Championship, a defeat for Cardiff away at the Hawthorns against tabletoppers West Brom. 4-2, a very high-scoring affair, which you don't usually associate with games involving Neil Warnock. West Brom were 3-0 up. Cardiff got it back to 3-2, but then Sawyers scored the winner. What will Warnock take from that game? Will he say, actually, we show some real resilience, or will he be more concerned by the number of goals conceded?
I think the number of goals being conceded has got to be the biggest concern. I mean, it was interesting actually listening to Warnock after the game. He was saying that he's actually quite critical of his team in the final third. I think couldn't hit a barn door was his exact words or whatever. But I think that's actually probably a little bit harsh. I mean, they've scored, I think it's about 8 goals in the last 4 games. So I mean, they are scoring goals. I mean, I know on an individual level, perhaps Robert Glatzel's not quite hit the heights that we all hoped for. But I think the biggest thing you can take from that game is Danny Ward's performance. I mean, he's come off the bench and scored 2 goals, and he's got to be banging on the door, really. But, for me, especially away from home, it's interesting, really, because Swansea have got problems at home but are unbeaten on the road. And it's kind of the reverse for Cardiff. I mean, they're unbeaten at home, but most of their problems this season have come on the road, conceded, I think it's 13 goals on the road. That's got to be the biggest concern. But like I said, Danny Ward, after his performance on Saturday, he's got to feel like he's in with a chance of starting after the international break.
Interestingly, when we look at the team that Cardiff picked, again, Alex Smithies was picked in goal, despite the fact that Neil Etheridge has recently returned from injury. Do you think the fact that Cardiff conceded 4 goals will perhaps encourage Warnock to put Etheridge in post the international break, or is that perhaps too big a knee-jerk reaction, and that Smithies has been performing well enough to keep that spot?
Perhaps. I think Smithies has kept his place there because I think Warnock's been impressed with him. And to be fair, on the whole, in Etheridge's absence, he's not actually done too badly. So it is an interesting one. I'm sure there are some Cardiff fans who'd like to see Neil Etheridge back in. But, I mean, I... I've got to say, I don't really have too many concerns with Alex Smith in goal. I mean, my concern really in terms of Cardiff City defensively is I don't see a lot of pace in that back four. I mean, they're desperately missing Bruno Manga, who obviously left in the summer, and Sol Bamba is also a big miss for them. But when you've got the likes of Aidan Flint and Sean Morrison, you can dominate in the air, dominate in the set piece. But like I said, there's not a lot of pace. And when you come up against a team that are as technically good as West Brom are, and as we all saw on Saturday, it can cause problems for that Cardiff defence.
And just finally, Neil Warnock has already got his complaints in over Cardiff having to play a Friday night championship game immediately after the international break for the second time this season. They're playing at home against Sheffield Wednesday on Friday the 18th of October. Does he have a real point there, and that the scheduling isn't fair to all teams and isn't right? Or is this perhaps, is this maybe the wrong thing to try and say before the game, because it distracts the players thinking about, we're hard done by, and that we shouldn't really be playing on this night?
I don't think the players will be thinking like that. I don't really think Neil Warnock will be thinking like that. I don't think we can read a massive amount into those comments, to be honest. I actually think he's kind of got a point. I mean, in the last international break, he was left a bit annoyed with Leandro Bacuna arriving late. But of course, Bacuna's come back and slotted into that midfield and actually been one of their better performers. But, I think Neil Warnock will have his grumbles, and to a certain extent I do sympathise, but I don't think it's going to come into the mindset of the players too much, to be honest.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Tom. That was Tom Coleman, sports writer at The Wales Online, talking us through Swansea's shock 2-1 loss at home against Stoke. Has that kind of kept Nathan Jones's job, at least for the near future, for the next few weeks, despite his very honest admission after their defeat to Huddersfield that he had gambled with his wife's life, he had gambled with his staff's life, and he had thrown it all away, and he was pretty much resigned to being sacked? He's still there. And also Cardiff losing a high scoring game at West Brom. It looked like Cardiff might secure a 3-3 draw away at the table toppers, but West Brom did score a late fourth, which meant they won by 4-2. And Neil Warnock already getting his complaints in ahead of the first game after the international break, which is on the Friday night at home against Sheffield Wednesday. If you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in contact with us to talk about how your Championship club has started the season, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. Plenty as we're talking about with the Championship as we head into the second international break. We all thought that Nathan Jones probably would have lost his job by now after that loss against Huddersfield. He felt condemned to losing his job. And then they go to Swansea, who've made such an impressive start to the season, and yet they come up with all 3 points. Big surprise there. Looking elsewhere, West Brom, top of the table, 4-2 winners, as we mentioned, against Cardiff. The real surprise package has been Nottingham Forest, currently joint top of the table on 22 points with West Brom. They beat Brentford 1-0 on the weekend, and they're doing a terrific job. Not many people expected this of Nottingham Forest to, at this stage, 11 games in, to be right up there, joint top with West Brom. So certainly doing a very good job at the top of the table. For some other clubs, it's a real downhill spiral at the moment. For sides like Barnsley and Reading, they're in real trouble. Also, Jonathan Woodgate under huge amounts of pressure currently at Middlesbrough. They lost 2-1 away at Birmingham. So huge amounts of pressure already on Jonathan Woodgate so early on in his tenure up at the Riverside Stadium. But Stoke still bottom of the table, 5 points. They did win, as I mentioned, away at Bristol City away at Swansea on the weekend. But Nathan Jones still there at the Bet365. Still not lost his job, and it's felt like at times over the last couple of weeks it's a matter of days when, not if, Nathan Jones loses his job. But as it stands, Nathan Jones is still the Stoke City manager. And will that win away at Swansea rejuvenate Nathan Jones? It's 5 wins in 35 games in charge of Swansea. So will he be able to keep, sorry, at Stoke. So will he be able to keep his job at the Bet365? We're going to talk all things Fulham now with Love Sport's very own Dom Betts from the Fulhamish podcast. 2-2 draw against Charlton. You had to come from behind twice to draw level. What was your kind of instant reaction after that draw?
I think I said before, the run of three games that we had, obviously Wigan, then Reading, then Charlton, I said, well, you've got to take a minimum of 7 points. I think 7 points out of nine is top six form, and 9 points would have been top two form, I guess is the way you can say. You could argue we were unlucky not to win the game, but I think that, you know, on the balance of play, a draw, it wasn't an unfair result on either side. And yeah, I mean, it's not a result that's the end of the world. It's just if we have aspirations of automatic promotion this season, you know, that sort of game against a, you know, at this stage of season anyway, a promotion rival at home is where you need to get in 3 points.
Would you say it was a much better performance second half compared to first half? And do you think that starting at 12:30, do you think that kind of, in some ways, for some teams, makes it difficult to get going, that you're not used to playing that early in the day, and that can be a reason? Or is that kind of a lame excuse to suggest why you start slowly in a game?
No, I think that's a lame excuse. I think we've just started a lot of the games this season fairly poorly. In the two games, if you look at the games we have started well, they're the games, you know, we've won fairly comfortably against, you know, Millwall and against Reading. So I think for us, it's, we did start slow. The first half was very poor from us, very dull. And obviously, Charlton went it 1-0 in the lead. Very good goal by Conor Gallagher. But yeah, I think that the second half was a lot better. Sort of vintage Ivan Caviero by sort of just, you know, doing nothing for the entire game, cutting inside and then scoring a goal. But yeah, you know, we had a chance right at the end with Bobby Reid. But I think for us, it was a solid performance. It was just, you know, we could have scored that late chance from Bobby Reid, but I think it was probably a fair result on the balance of play. Yes, Charlton may not have had as many chances as we did, but I think personally that, you know, the way they played in the first half, it draw probably was the fair result in the end.
Mitrovic then, it's 8 goals in 11 league games, tops the Championship goal scoring charts. I think I've asked you this before, but how on earth did Fulham convince Mitrovic to stay? Is it simply the relationship he has with the Fulham board that's able to keep him there? Because no disrespect to you, but you are in the Championship and he is a good enough player to be playing in the Premier League.
Oh, yeah, no, he is. He is good enough to play in the Premier League, and we saw that last season. I think, he, you know, there was a lot of games where he was probably our best player but didn't score the goals. But I think that I think it's underrated how much a player likes being at a club that he likes being at as opposed to playing at the highest level. I don't necessarily think that's the be all and end all to be playing in the Premier League. I don't see what it means for the player, because, you know, he signed a new contract. He wants to be at the club. His family are settled in London. So I think what people don't understand is that he enjoys being at Fulham Football Club. He enjoys being at Craven Cottage. He enjoys, you know, the rapport he has with the fans. I think that's very underrated in Mitrovic's case.
Looking at two players that came in on loan over the summer, Ivan Caballero scored one of the goals, and then Anthony Knockar provided the goal for Alexander Mitrovic. Had a cross that was diverted against the bar for Mitrovic.
Yeah, Kearney hit the bar, and then obviously Kearney went to Mitrovic on the yard out from goal. Yeah.
How impressive have those two been on loan? And I know that when we spoke kind of at the beginning of the season, you said how they were really sensible signings. So perhaps a bit surprised that, for example, Caballero wasn't kept by Wolves rather than send him and Helder Costa out on loan to the Championship. How intrinsic have they been to Fulham at the start of this season?
I think they have. I think Caviero, I'm not saying the flash in the pan, but often a good goal will overmask a very poor performance. I'm not saying poor performance, but yeah, I think Caviero could be playing better overall. Yes, he's popped up with quite a few goals for us, some good goals as well. Pretty much scored the same goal about 3 times, cutting inside onto his right foot and hitting it across goal. But I think that, you know, if he is going to do that, then great. Because yes, he may not be putting in the performance you necessarily want to see all the time, but, you know, if he's going to be scoring the goals, that's the most important thing. Because realistically, our goals have come from Mitrovic, Kearney, or Caviero this season. So, yeah, I have been impressed. I think Knockart, I don't know if it's such a thing as saying trying too much, but I think you sometimes do have the case with Anthony Knockart that he does get really frustrated when something does come up. It sometimes does affect his performance, but, you know, wide areas where he did need to strengthen, obviously with Sessegnon going to Spurs, and, you know, we lost Floyd Ayite as well. So I think, yeah, they have been very impressive, them too. One players I've been most impressed with is actually Harrison Reed from Southampton. I think it was a very, very good signing. When we signed him, I was quite concerned, not concerned, or quite confused as to why we did, because we already signed Harry Arter a few days earlier. But, you know, Harrison Reed, he's just, what needs to happen is when you have the likes of him, Arthur, Johansson in behind Kearney, it just helps Kearney play better because it allows Kearney to sort of not have to do any running, if that makes sense, and allow him to have the legs behind him to play very well. So, yeah, I think actually out of all the loan signings, you could argue that Harry Arthur and Harrison Reed could possibly have impressed more than obviously the flash skills of Knockaert and Caviero.
One of the things that Scott Parker said after the game was that as a result of being a big team in this league, sides will go to Craven Cottage and pay us a lot of respect, and we need to live up to that, and then our quality will prevail. Fulham had 70% possession but weren't able to win the game. Is that something that Scott Parker is going to have to learn a huge amount from? Is that for a lot of home games in the Championship, Fulham are going to have probably quite a lot of possession. They're going to have a lot of the ball, and they're perhaps going to break sides down. Are you kind of confident that Fulham will find ways against sides that might sit back very, very deep to not just score goals, but to win games?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you're looking at the teams who are in the top half of the table or challenging for the top six anyway, a lot of those teams are teams who like the ball. I'm thinking the likes of Leeds, I'm thinking Swansea. So, you know, Charlton are probably an anomaly in aspect. You know, Alex Neil, although he's not a possession-based side at present, they do like, you know, they have scored quite a lot. Scored quite a lot of goals this season. So I think that it will be fine. I think the problem is a lot of our players that we've got, I'm not saying they're not suited to a possession-based system, but I'm thinking someone like Caviero, if you've got the possession and they've got a deep line, low block, there's not enough space for him to run into, and thankfully that's how he scored his goal, because he had that ball, that space which he cut inside on to run into. So I think sometimes when we do have that much of the ball, I'm not saying it harms the way we play, but I think sometimes it's just if we only had 55-60% possession, we'd actually be able to play better because, you know, we'd still have more, we have more space to run into, whereas if we're going to have the ball for 70% of the time, they can just stick, you know, four men behind the ball, eight men behind the ball, and, you know, it's going to harm the way we play. So I think it's about adapting the way we play to suit the players we've got.
Another thing that surprised me was a really quite an honest admission from Scott Parker. He said the hangover from last year was still there early in the season, but in the last two or three weeks, I feel the tide is firmly with us. Are you, as a fan, are you annoyed by that type of a comment? That even though it seemed quite obvious for a little while that Fulham were going to get relegated, that at the start of this season, they were still feeling the ill effects. These guys are professional footballers, so surely they should be able to... And considering Fulham haven't been a regular Premier League side in the last decade, so it's not like they've been there for 20 years and then suddenly it's a new experience for them. Are you concerned?
Yeah, it's not like when we got relegated in 13-14, where we've been in the Premier League 13 years. Yeah. And, you know, it's what Stoke is suffering from now. Any established Premier League team, for me, will never get automatically promoted because they're not structured in the right way. I think it's not maybe a hangover, it's the change in mentality, because if you are a team who gets relegated, you've been used to losing, let's face it. And it's hard to change that mentality around. I think it is why we lost to Barnsley on the opening day, because, you know, they just got promoted. They've got that winning mentality. They were unbeaten at home in what, a year or whatever it was. And then we, you know, had been terrible away from home. I think we won one away game last season away to Bournemouth once we'd already been relegated. So I think it's all about, you know, a switch in mentality as opposed to necessarily a hangover from the previous season. I think it is just change that losing mentality into a winning mentality. It's why, you know, teams do go on these runs, because it isn't simply a fact of, you know, click of a fingers and snap, you can change. I think it is you've got to change whole mentality, and we are seeing it with us finally get into our stride in the league this year.
Parker also did say that the international break comes now at a bad time. Do you view it like that? Just as Fulham are getting some momentum, they don't have to stop for 2 weeks? Or does that actually, because it's a long season, you have to maintain this over such a long period of time, that actually a two-week break isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world?
I think what a good point he's making is that September wasn't like August. September, we only had three games. Whereas in August, we played six in all competitions, including the cup lost to Southampton. So I'm not saying it. I don't think it's ever a bad time for an international break to come about. I think that's ludicrous. The only time it's helpful is if you're about to sack a manager, which Stoke were probably going to do until they end up going away to Swansea and beating them. So I think that it's, I don't think it's a good or a bad time. I think it's just the nature of how a season strides. You know, you've got the international break here. I actually think that going into it on a draw, 7 points out of nine, is a perfectly fine place. I think the worst thing you want to do is go into the international break on a loss, because then what you want to do when you lose, you want to bounce back straight away. That's why the championship can be so good, because you can lose on the Sunday and then you're playing again on a Tuesday night and you can win or something. So I don't think it's come at a good or bad time, really. I think it's just sort of the nature of the season. But yeah, I think we'll come off the international break. We've got three games in a week. I think we've got to go away to Stoke, have Luton at home, and then go away to Middlesbrough. Again, looking at those three games, you're expecting 7 or 9 points, I'd say. Probably easier than our last three games. So yeah, I think that it's has come at a good time, because we can regroup. You know, got all our players pretty much fit now, so you know, or not suspended in Harry Arter's case. So yeah, I think it's going to be a good time to regroup, and then we can really, you know, work on a system, because we still have been changing the midfield around a lot, and I think that's what we need to sort out. We know what the front three is, or front four is in essence, and we know what the back four and keeper are going to be. It's just working out what those two midfielders behind Tom Kearney are going to do, and I think this international break will actually come at a good time to work that out.
It does look like a favourable run of fixtures: away at Stoke, home to Luton, away at Middlesbrough, at home to Hull. Just finally then, Dom, in terms of the championship as a whole, Fulham are up in seventh. The surprise packages for me, Nottingham Forest, I don't think many would have expected them to be second, pretty much joint top, actually, with West Brom, Preston off the back of a 5-1 win at the weekend. There are teams that you'd expect lead. I know West Brom were a side that you expected a lot of at the beginning of the season, but of those teams up there, and honestly just above Fulham, but also just below, that are surprises or teams to look out for going forward this season?
I don't think Preston is a surprise. I think maybe, you know, their place in the table right now was a surprise, but then to be challenging for promotion or the playoffs for me isn't a surprise. They've been very good over the last few seasons under Alex Neil, and I think we're finally seeing the fruits of that. And they're a bit like Bristol City in the fact that they always just miss out on the playoff position, so I don't think it's too surprising. Nottingham Forest is a surprise, but that's because no one knew what to expect. I don't think anyone knew who Lamouchi was when he came in. So I think that they beat us at Craven Cottage. I was impressed with them, very effective side, and I think they are going to be challenging for promotion this season. But I still do think Swansea are going to drop off, challenging for automatics, which I think has been a good thing for us this season. Is there is no runaway leader yet. You know, it's still so close at the top of the championship. I think it's 7 points or 5 points separating the top 10 or something crazy like that.
22 in top. And Derby in 13th are on 15 points.
Yeah, anyone's still in it, you know. There was a time when we were 11 points behind Leeds compared to 7th to 6th, and we still overtook them. So I think that, for me, yeah, the season is wide open. I think that's been a good thing, is that I'm not saying you can have a run of bad form, but, you know, like, let's say in a week we started the week in 10th. We beat Reading, we go up to 2nd. Then obviously we draw against Charlton, we're down to 7th. So it shows how this league can change. I think we're doing perfectly fine, you know, as long as you're in the contention. You don't want all the pressure to be on you if you're atop the league. You want to be in and around there, so stay within anything 6 points, really, and then you can seriously challenge for those top two places still.
Thank you very much for joining us, Dom. That was Love Sport's very own and part of the Fulhamish podcast, Dom Betts, talking about Fulham, their start, a decent start for them, currently in 7th. And also talking about some of the surprise teams. Nottingham Forest most certainly are second at the moment. Also the likes of Sheffield Wednesday, who are just below Fulham. Same number of points in 8th place. Obviously, they only appointed Gary Monk a month or so into the season, so they've certainly done a very, very good job. If you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Loughborough Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. We'll be continuing to look back at the weekend's action. One of the big games, for different reasons, was Millwall up against Leeds after Neil Harris's resignation on Thursday night. Millwall got a 2-1 lead after Leeds were down to 10 men for a lot of the game. What does that mean for Adam Barrett, who began life as the caretaker manager with that win, and who might they appoint in this international break? They've got a couple of weeks to decide. So we'll be talking all things Millwall next.
Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're going to be talking all things Millwall, and after a pretty whirlwind few days after Neil Harris's resignation on Thursday night, they came up against Leeds, one of the sides right near the top of the table. Millwall won by 2-1, and Adam Barrett began his life as the caretaker manager with that win against 10-man Leeds. I'm sure our next guest would have been delighted with the result, but I'm sure shocked by the news of Harris's resignation. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Stan Godwin from No One Likes Us Talking. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Stan. Before we talk about that game, Your thoughts when you heard that news on Thursday night? Neil Harris, who's an absolute club legend, one of the favourite people at Millwall for all Millwall fans. How shocked were you? And now with days on, has that shock slightly switched and you kind of understand why he made that decision?
Well, in a way, it wasn't a surprise, right? Because the Friday before, when I was up on the No One Likes Us Talking show then, I was asked, because we was then asked a question about New Harris and you know, and was he under pressure and one thing and another. And I did point out at that time that we had three games coming up, Huddersfield, Luton and Leeds. And as we'd have gone three of them games and not won, right, then the pressure would have been on New Harris. Absolutely no question of that. But I was somewhat surprised when I got a phone call from a mate of mine, and he just, when I answered the phone, he just said to me, he's gone. And I said, who's gone? And then he told me New Harris. So in a way, it didn't surprise me. It probably worked out for the better, because my view is that had Neil Harris had been in charge on Saturday, I think it would have been a different result altogether, because he would have played a different style of football. We'd have had Matt Smith up front. I've got nothing against Matt Smith, but he would have had Matt Smith up front, and it would have been the age-old problem, which has sort of been the problem, because Neil Harris is a disciple of Route 1 football. And that was what was causing all the unrest.
Leeds were down to 10 men stand for a lot of the game, and Millwall went 2-0 up, were pegged back to 2-1, but held on for the win. Millwall only had 32% possession despite being a man up. Was that surprising that Millwall perhaps didn't have more control of the game, or is that kind of irrelevant, because what was important is all 3 points?
Well, it was a bit of a mix, really, because, you know, I mean, I was when I see the stats afterwards, I was somewhat surprised, because, to be fair, when we were playing on Saturday, we had a lot more of the ball on the floor than we did keep getting it lumped up in the air. But then by the same token, I mean, you're playing a team that were a club, Leeds, who are an excellent side, you know. I mean, they are a good footballing team, no question of that. And at times, if somebody had come into that ground and not knowing they were down to 10 men and not sat and counted the opposition, you would have thought they were playing at full strength. So 10 men or not, they was always going to be a problem from our point of view. But Leeds being Leeds, we were confident anyway before we went into that game, because Leeds' record against us is not that good. I mean, they've only beaten us once in 8 times at Millwall after Saturday. So we was always confident that we'd get the win. But, as I say, had Neil Harris had still been in charge and the way he would have played it, then I think we'd have ended up losing that game. And then had we lost that game, I think all hell would have let loose, you know.
That was... Sorry, Stan. That was Millwall's first victory since the 17th of August. Why? Oh. You intimated that had Neil Harris been in charge, then there wouldn't have been a slight change in the tactics. Was that the main reason as to why Millwall were able to get the 3 points, or was the major factor the fact that Leeds had to play with 10 men for most of the game?
No, I would argue the major reason that we got the 3 points is because we played a different style. And that's the reason, in my opinion, why... For example, in last season, I mean, and I have to say, it's not just me, it's other people, but last season we was in a position of winning positions of games, and then we ended up losing them. And sometimes we had 3 or 4 minutes left. And the reason we were doing that is because we kept giving the ball away. And if you keep lumping it forward, and you know, you're playing against teams in the Championship who play the ball on the floor and they play at the feet, they don't just lump it anywhere. Then you're always going to be, you know, and we're told that these, like Leeds, are a quality team. But if you keep giving them the ball, right, eventually you're going to pay a price for that. And that's what was happening last season. But what we didn't know then was that the behind the scenes that was going on, and because when we got to the end of the season, or after the last home defeat or the last home game, you know, Neil Harris come out and he told us all what was going on as much as he could, and then there was a couple of days later, Steve Morrison was saying, well, if he named names, you know, careers would be over and all the rest of it. And everybody said, well, we've got to have a clear out, which he then did. The ball backed him, which was fine. And when these players were brought in, no one, I don't recall anyone complaining about it. And so therefore, we was hoping to start off the season with a win. I mean, and the significance of the home game this season is that last season, at the home game, we played Middlesbrough. We were two up with 4 minutes to go, and we ended up drawing the game 2-2. When we played Preston this season, albeit it was only 1-0, but that meant, you know, apart from the three, we'd actually won the first game. It was a psychological thing that we had to do. And then we started off okay, and then all of a sudden it seemed to suddenly start going back to what was occurring last season. And because, you know, and our supporters being what they are, they reminded people that, you know, they weren't having it. And that we were never going to have a rerun of what took place last season. Never, our blokes were never going to accept that.
And just one quick final one for you, Stan. Just quickly, should caretaker manager Adam Barrett be given the job full time, or if not, is there a name that strikes you as the man that should take over?
Well, personally, I've got nothing against Adam Barrett, but I wouldn't know, because I think what we need to do now is we need to get somebody in there with some, you know, kudos. Now, a couple of the names have been mentioned. I mean, I personally would favour Chris Hughton. Another name that's been mentioned, you know, is Aitor Karanka. Right. I certainly don't want Roy Keane in there. Certainly we wouldn't want McLaren in there. And these ex-Millwall players that I keep hearing about, Kevin Muscat. Well, I mean, not that I've got anything against Kevin Muscat, but I mean, what's his managerial experience? Adam Barrett would be better than him, but he's only had the one game. So, you know, so we need somebody in there that's experienced in that division. Because what would happen is, and as I say, I've got nothing against Adam Barrett, but if we went on a win of two or three games and then suddenly, you know, we get defeated and it was then going again defeat after defeat, people would then be saying, oh, yeah, you see, Millwall appointed, you know, he was the cheap option. So, to be fair, he done well. But I think if he gets someone in there like Chris Hughton, I mean, I know it's easy to say, but you never know what's happening, then I don't think too many people will complain.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Stan. That was Stan Godwin from No One Likes Us Talking. Remember, you can catch the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport every Friday night from 9 until 10 o'clock. So any Millwall fans out there, make sure you stay tuned to that.
This is Love Sport.